Hello and welcome to a podcast from the EDUCAUST 2008 Annual Conference. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. This is Jerry Bain, podcasting from the EDUCAUST 2008 Conference in Orlando, Florida, and I'm joined today in conversation with Alan Williams, Head of Systems and Desktop Services at Australian National University. Thanks for being with us today, Alan. In the U.S., there's a movement to consolidate information and library services in one area of the library, the Information or Learning Commons. Do you see this trend in Australia as well, and could you tell us about your Information Commons?
It's mixed across the country. Within our institution, we actually have a joint library and IT unit together in the Division of Information because we firmly believe information management is the way of the future. Although a couple of other institutions across the country are now splitting their libraries and IT because of some of the funding issues, I believe. Mm-hmm. The libraries tend to have a very traditional funding model, and IT doesn't seem to be as well defined, and so there is a little bit of tension in that space. Mm-hmm. But at our place, it seems to work reasonably well, and for our Information Commons, we like to think of it as a virtual workspace for our students. Primarily, we're a research-intensive teaching institute, mm-hmm. or the other way around, a teaching research institute. Research institute.
Right.
Basically, within Australia, where we have a large population of research masters and PhD and graduate students compared to other institutions. So we have some faculty, as you call them, mm-hmm. that are focused primarily just on research and that's all they do.
Right.
And our teaching component is actually relatively small in comparison to other...
So you're more of a research...
We're more of a research institute.
Okay.
Which does some undergraduate teaching.
So would you say that sort of changes the environment of a Information's Common from an emphasis on teaching and learning to an emphasis on more having tools and resources for researchers to use?
I think it does. Mm-hmm. And that's reflected in the type of applications and software that we deploy out to our desktop environments. Mm-hmm. So we run a fleet of PCs and Macintosh across the institution, about a 75-25 split. Mm-hmm. The max being 25. And we have about 160 different applications on that desktop. So from very obviously the Words and Excels right up to some of the larger statistical packages and sort of range of offerings there.
You have a very distributed desktop environment. Are there technologies you use to keep your environment updated and clean?
We use a product called ManageSoft, mm-hmm. To actually do the management of the PC side of things, to do the deployment of software. On the Mac side of things, we use something from the University of Michigan, the Redmine.
Okay.
So our Mac gurus are keen on pushing that, and they do a very good job. But apart from that, it is a continual problem. And being able to provide a clean environment for our students is always a little bit of a challenge, and to give them the flexibility to do the things they need to do. We would like to move into a more virtualized environment, and so we're piloting a virtual IC, mm-hmm. For student laptops into the future. But due to software licensing restrictions, there are some applications that we can't deploy because they have to live on a machine owned by us, or due to the size of the application, we can't guarantee that the student will have an environment capable of supporting it. So we're still working through a lot of those issues as to what we can ship out, what we have to keep, and how big it does it need to get.
So server virtualization, you just spoke about, it's a big trend right now. What are your thoughts on virtualization in terms of, you know, challenges and advantages?
We've actually started to virtualize our environments back in 2005. We started moving our servers across. We started the process of moving out from pizza boxes to blades, mm-hmm. and then the next step was to then start doing virtualization of servers. The reason for going that way was for rapid response, so that you always get these inquiries from various researchers or people have left things to the last moment. Oh, we need another server to do this. Mm-hmm. And virtualization gave us that flexibility to be agile and respond and say, well, oh, okay, here it is. invariably they want it now, but they don't actually use it until another couple of months. So it gives us that breathing space to show that we're responsive, and then time to maybe buy another server at the back end if we need to support it on a physical hardware environment. So that's one aspect of it. The other is the business continuity. And so we've gone with VMware, and the ability to move our virtual service from one data center to another data center just gives us that flexibility that if this equipment needs to be taken offline for repairs or something like that, we can actually move it across without disrupting the service. And encapsulating those awkward little applications which don't play nicely with other apps and they want to have complete control of the system, again, virtualization gives us that advantage where we can give it its own little sandbox. It can do what it wants because it's effectively a large software file. Backing it up and replicating it is a bit of a stack, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're all in favor of it.
Yeah. Have there been any sort of problems you've had with virtualizing or any challenges that you've road bumps you've hit?
Some road bumps. Some of them have been actually finding staff that can sort of grasp the concept and just sort of training up staff. The technology is still evolving,
right.
So we're sort of going through this migration between different versions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to push it out to all the colleges within. So we have a distributed IT unit. We have a core central IT, but we have a number of colleges which have their own IT departments.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to bring them on board into improving the quality of their support services. And virtualization gives us a way of dragging them into the center and then guaranteeing that the data is looked after appropriately.
Right.
Things like that.
Does disaster recovery figure into virtualization at all?
Yes, it does. And that was one of the advantages of having it as a software file. It's easier to actually just roll back out again off the tape.
And, for BCP.
And for BCP,
yeah.
Too. So our focus is more on the BCP side of things, but it has the benefit of disaster recovery. And recently, sort of the green initiatives, you don't have as many boxes.
Right.
You're making better utilization of the services you have, and reducing the heat load on our data centers, which is always problematic. There's a limit to how much you can shove into a small space.
Right. And air conditioning.
And air conditioning, that's right.
So what are your thoughts on the rise of cloud computing, and what do you think the implications are for desktop computing with that?
I think cloud computing just has a whole raft of possibilities, and I think it's the way that we're all going to go.
Could you just give me a quick layman's definition of cloud computing?
I can give you my definition.
Okay.
I see cloud computing as being the where you no longer actually own the servers or control where the data lives. You trust the internet service, you connect to your data through a web browser, and you don't care where it lives on which server or where the data's stored, whether it's stored in the US or in Europe, or it's just there, and it's available over the network.
How does security figure into something like that?
Security is a problem, and in fact, having data stored in the US is actually a problem for us, because data then gets covered by the Patriot Act in the US.
Right.
So even though it has nothing to do with the US government or the institutions here, they then have the right to inspect all of the data and those sort of things. So getting around the political issues is probably the biggest drawback to cloud computing.
That's interesting, yeah.
That most people are happy to sort of trust a generic service provider, but the issues around privacy and the sort of differences in laws between countries make it actually problematic.
So technology is finally catching up with, or actually surpassing.
So I think the technology is there.
Yeah.
I think it's the legal ramifications that need to be worked through.
Right.
And so we may see cloud computing within individual countries, but to actually get the full benefit of having a global cloud, I think could be a little while off.
Yeah.
People will either have to give up things that they've always considered as being private, or just trust that government's going to do the right thing.
And you don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that. That's right.
Cool. Well, so, you know, go ahead. Yeah. You have more to add.
So the implication for that is that, well, what I'm hoping is that I won't have to provide as many desktops out there for for students, that this ability to be always on, always connected to the network via, what do they call them, the web tops, the smaller laptops that aren't very powerful. You don't need anything more than a web browser, and everything you need is available over the web, and the computer happens off your desktop, happens...
Like, the computing power happens outside? For RAM, for instance, that sort of computing power? I mean, where's the line between how much computing power you need personally versus what's on a virtual server?
It needs to be all on the virtual server out in that space. So virtual servers are, in fact, part of the cloud component. And then you can have virtualization of storage behind that as well.
So is the actual software performance happening on the web?
It's happening on the web, and so your web browser is just effectively a portal or a screen onto what's happening elsewhere.
That's really interesting, because then it takes all the burden off the computer.
Yeah, it does. Okay. And I think that's why I think it's the next, it's the way to go,
right.
Because then you can suddenly have small devices, your iPhone, smartphones, which suddenly can connect you into supercomputers, and you can kick off your supercomputing visualization application through your phone. You may not be able to get the full benefits of the output, but those sort of things that I think are going to come along.
Are there any current technologies or trends you're seeing that intrigue you besides cloud computing?
Besides cloud computing, I think the rise of the iPhone seems to be... I also think that although there were smartphones and PDAs before, Apple have targeted a niche market. I can't even say that the price has actually dropped significantly from other smartphones, although it has come down considerably from the traditional Palms and the Trios and things like that. But I think that's a wave of innovation that will come through our institutions and gives us a number of possibilities of how we can actually deliver material to students and how we can actually interact with students. Suddenly you've got a device that could become a clicker, one of these sort of worktops into the space. The GPS tracking capabilities is kind of the big brother downside of it.
Right.
But again, it's a great way of keeping track of kids and making sure that they're in particular locations that they're supposed to be and things like that.
Is there anything else you want to add about what you're doing at the university? I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, I'm just opening it up. If there's something you want to talk about with the larger community, or you know, what brings you to EDUCAUSE this year, or anything you want to talk about?
Well, okay. So my background is in IT security, and certainly concerns that you've raised about security in the cloud is an issue for me. We're certainly looking at people like Google and Microsoft as a way of delivering a service to students that we can no longer keep up with. So it's now to the stage where a lot of these providers are providing cool tools and technologies that I can't afford to deliver locally, and I just can't keep up with the demand. So yes, I can create a shared wiki or something like that on my servers at home, but I can't provide the richness of a Facebook interface, and just because there's so many contributors. And I think we have to start looking at more of that sort of outsourcing type of thing. That then starts to bring into question as to what do you really do need to provide to students. And in some ways, what's the nature of the institution? So in the past, you could have defined a whole set of data sets as belonging to a particular institution or a particular cohort of students. Mm-hmm. But I think the internet is just opening that up, and suddenly
the lines are getting blurred.
The lines are becoming very blurred, and it's data's then being made available from all over the world. You can use data sets from mm-hmm. the US or from the UK or Australia to do particular research topics. You're no longer confined to using your department's collaborative solution. Mm-hmm. You want to collaborate globally. So they're the good side. The downside is who's going to pay for it all,
right?
And the economics of actually keeping it running. So it's one thing to make all these data sets and everything available, but there still has to be somebody who's going to foot the bill at the back end to make these things available online. And I think that's a challenge for institutions where they'll say that, well, we've outsourced all these things to Google or to Microsoft. Where's the ownership of the institution's repository, its digital repository, and getting funding for that? So I think that brings us almost back to your first question.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's the information management side of things where I see things, and that blurring, in fact, that our librarians hopefully will be moved into the digital age.
Yeah.
And it's the curation of that material that'll become important.
Well, one of the things I saw, and I might not state this very well, but one of the things I saw when I was looking up cloud computing, one of the naysayers of cloud computing was talking about, I don't know if they can track the licenses the same way, and there was a concern raised about that.
They can't track the licenses the same way, and it is who's going to pay for it. It's that back end side
of
things.
Right.
So the ANU is involved with Sakai, and the Sakai Foundation, and we've recently just joined Qali.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's these sort of initiatives that have been started by institutions, and it's a commitment to donate time and developers to supporting those sort of things that it's mm-hmm. going to. Mm-hmm. Keep this sort of thing happening. So for a small investment locally, we can then sort of get a global benefit because there's no way I could actually afford to have 100 developers working on an application. Mm-hmm. But I can contribute one, maybe two, to part of a global pool and get more bang for my buck, basically. I think they're great initiatives, and for those that aren't members of Kai and the Qali Foundation, I think being part of those type of initiatives and those developments is important.
Yeah, one of the things that's great about higher education is the willingness that institutions have, even if they're in competition with each other, the information that's shared between institutions and higher education is really, like, singular.
No, you don't get that in the corporate world, and in reality, a lot of the things that we share aren't competitive advantages. So there's no competitive advantage in us having different learning management systems. Students aren't going to choose a college or a university based on a learning management system. In fact, in the LMS space, Blackboard WebCT probably already has 70-80% of the market, so it's not a differentiator anymore.
Right.
It's the quality of the teaching and the quality of the research and the specializations in those areas that attract the students, and also where their mates are going and that sort of stuff.
Right. Exactly. Cool. Well, Alan Williams, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.